Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Story County Board of Commissioners meeting. Anybody has any cell phones or any audible devices? If you'd silence them now, is not to disrupt the rest of the meeting. We'd appreciate it. And if you'd stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. First up this morning is item 3, discussion and possible action, the approval of the agenda for April the 3rd, 2018. Do we have to make any changes or corrections to today's agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if you could please move item 23, dealing with the room tax, transient lodging tax, to immediately after item number 4, the consent agenda. And then I believe the district attorney has a correction as well.
I'll just correct it on mine.
Okay. Yeah. We're good.
Very good. Thank you. Any public comment regarding today's agenda? Enough. I get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda for April 3rd, 2018, with the changes of that being moving item 23 to follow item 4.
Thank you.
Second motion.
All right. Moved and second to approve the agenda for this day, April 3rd, 2018. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 4. This is today's consent agenda. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, if we can go ahead and get a motion for approval.
I'll move to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll second the motion.
Moved and second to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 23.
We need to call Keith.
You can wait just a moment. We're going to go ahead and get Chief Deputy District Attorney on the phone. I'll go ahead and read the narrative to this agendized item.
Okay.
This is item 23, discussion of possible action. The second reading of Ordinance 18-284, amending provisions for the transient lodging tax provisions of the Story County Code, Chapter 3.60, to provide for the maximum stay to which the tax applies, to clarify the disposition of the revenues of the tax, providing a route for review of the transient lodging tax audit and other matters properly relating thereto.
Okay.
The second reading is basically an ordinance that changes the maximum stay from less than 28 days to less than 30 days. That's to make it consistent with the real property landlord and tenant law. And really we're talking about two different things. One is the area of the Tri-Center, which is covered by the 1999 zoning ordinance and the resolution of similar uses. That resolution of similar uses authorizes motels and hotels within the commercial zones, which is authorized as 10% of the I-2 zone. The resolution of similar uses defines motels and hotels as transient occupancies, and once you exceed 30, we get to 30 days or more, you're talking landlord-tenant, which is a residential use rather than a transient use. And so the limitation within the Tri-Center is going to be the less than 30 days. Outside of the Tri-Center, under our zoning, there used to be a provision that defined extended stay hotels as a transient use less than 180 days. That provision has since been removed. and we are relegated to the motel and hotel uses, which is our transient uses. And this ordinance also provides for a method to appeal an audit of the room tax and provide some clarification as to the source of authority for the different room tax.
Okay. Well, actually, this is just rehashing, I think, everything that's been explained in round one with the first reading of this ordinance. So we'll go around the table here and ask the fellow commissioners if you have any concerns or questions regarding the second reading.
Mr. Chairman, in an abundance of caution, I've been advised that I'm going to recuse myself from discussion or voting on this issue, as I have a pecuniary interest in properties that remain that may accommodate hotel.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Gilman.
But this is for all hotels and motels.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Why don't we go ahead and open it up for public comment on this item now? Is there any public comment regarding this second reading? All right. I guess everyone is pretty well versed on this, Mr. Loomis. So, staff's recommendation to approve this?
Yes, sir.
At this time, I'll go ahead and ask for a motion to approve.
I, Jack McGuffey, Commissioner Jack McGuffey, move to approve the second reading and adoption of Ordinance 18-284.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Great. Thank you, Mr. Loomis.
Thank you.
Have a nice vacation. All right, moving along to item number five, this discussion and possible action, authorization and approval for the county manager to sign all associated documentation related to the processing of 5 Mile Waterline Replacement Project right-of-way, grant from the United States Department of Interior Bureau of Land Management. Ms. Nevin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, commissioners. For the past several years, county staff has been working with the Bureau of Land Management to obtain a right-of-way grant for the 5 Mile Waterline Replacement Project. Great news came to us on March 26th, about a week ago, when we received the right-of-way grant / temporary use permit documentation for signature and processing. So with your approval today, that'll authorize the county manager to sign this permit that we have in front of us today and any other associated documentation that may come up for this project. This right-of-way grant is for a total area of approximately 6.216 acres. It'll be in effect from the date of signature until December 31st of 2036. With this grant, that will allow us to move forward with this project. There's a few stipulations in here that we have to work around, some migratory bird species, some plant projects, but otherwise we are pretty well good to go with this. So.
And how many years have you been working on this project?
A few.
So, I guess quite a few.
Yeah, quite a few. So we were able to get the fee waived. So there is no fee on this. As you see, there was some negotiations that we had to go through and some documentation going back to about 1985 to make us exempt from that fee. So that saved us quite a large chunk of money.
Wow.
I hope our zip code doesn't take that long.
It already has.
All right. Commissioners, have any questions for Sherry?
No questions.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding this approval? Here you go. We get a motion.
I move to approve the county manager to sign all associated documentation related to the processing of the 5 Mile Waterline Replacement Project right-of-way grant from the United States Department of the Interior Bureau of Land Management.
Second the motion.
And moving to second to approve. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Ms. Nevin. Moving along now to item number six. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. Start off with Sheriff Antonoro. All right. Now we have Project Coordinator Mike North in today. Report, Mike.
Morning, Commissioners. Mike Northam for the record. I do have several sites to update you on. Public Works Maintenance Facility is 100% complete. Happy to report that. Community Development stands at about 90% complete. Just some painting left to do in there and reattaching a light fixture in there, and that building will be substantially complete. Station 71 stands about 95% complete. Again, just waiting on the electrician to install two light fixtures, an exhaust fan. We have to put the exit sign back, that sort of thing. And then that will take care of the insurance-related work. And I do have an agenda item coming up for the next meeting to approve a contract to replace the roof on Station 71. I'll have more remarks in detail about that at that time. Out of Station 72 out in the Highlands, the mold and asbestos abatement is complete. We did get our environmental clearance. I just received the hard copies on that today. That estimate has been submitted, and we're waiting on that to come back from the insurance company to get some crews in there to begin the repair work at 72. The courthouse roof, I know everyone can see the work that's been going on the south side of it there. That work began March 26 on Monday, but the week prior to that, we got some significant rainfall, particularly on March 21 and 22. The temporary patches that were in place around these chimneys that were rebuilt did slow the water coming in, but despite our best efforts, it did get in to the building. So we had two small areas of basically water staining, not damage as such. One of them actually is here in the courtroom. You can see the water stains there. It was a very similar area over in the recorder's office. Insurance has been notified about that, and Belfour is working on those two areas. They'll be addressing those. I am happy to report that the entire south side of the roof is dried in at this point. You'll see them up there installing the actual roof paneling with the flashing and counter-flashing. One thing to note about the roof, during the tear-off, that revealed a number of non-code compliant conditions, a lot of substandard conditions. I do have these photographed and documented, and of course they're being dealt with now as we properly install the roof on this building, and we are talking to the insurance company with regards to addressing the north half of the roof, because it is our belief that the north half of the roof shares the deficiencies that we found on the south side. But a lot of good things are happening in terms of the replacing the parapet caps. We're closing off the flues where birds have been getting in and unfortunately perishing. So that a lot of that's being taken care of. Here in the judge's chambers, we have all the old wallpaper is now out. The room is completely prepped for the plaster work, and we're just down to, again, subcontractor availability to get them in there. We are ready to rock and roll as soon as we can get a plaster guy in there. Over in the clerk's office, you'll notice the ceiling tiles. Ceiling tile installation is underway. We did come across a technical issue related to how they're attached to the ceiling, and I'm working with Belfour on a solution for that. But also, like the judge's chambers, they are ready for plaster work as soon as we can get our plaster master up here. And again, one of the factors, big factors, is subcontractor availability. See, the last of the sites, the DA's office and the Lockwood Senior Center, both of those have had their repair estimates submitted. We anticipate approval of that sometime this week, and we may be able to start rolling crews at the end of this week, beginning of next, in those two facilities. DA's office is going to be a weekends-only type of work to minimize the footprint in there. The scope of work in there is such that we can pull it off on a Saturday, Sunday, and get that buttoned up. Last item was the communications tower out at USA Parkway. I'm just looking at the status of the parcel out there. Once everything falls into place on that, I do have an estimate, a plan, and we can pull the trigger on that project very quickly once that becomes available to us. So, any questions?
No. Mm-hmm. Great. Good report, Mike. Thank you. Thanks, sir. All right. The director of the community chest and library, Eric Schoen.
Good morning. For the record, Eric Schoen, Community Chest. Three quick things. One is a reminder that we have our spring benefit concert coming up on Friday the 13th with Grammy-winning dobro player Jerry Deculus. We are on track with ticket sales. They're tracking with last year's sellout with Rodney Crowell, so We still have tickets available if people are interested. If you can help get the word out too, that would be great. But if you want to come, there's still tickets available. Just go to our website or drop by our pink house, the old building that we're in. Also, I wanted to give an update on the companies that we're connected with. Thanks to Chris and Commissioner McGuffey, we're now connected with Nature's Way, Thrive Market, and Chewy's. And so, who knew that we would be in the shipping and receiving business and have to figure out how to receive pallets of goods and then figure out how to distribute those. But the last shipment we got from Thrive Market, which for those of you who are unfamiliar with Thrive, they are like a cross between Amazon and Whole Foods. So it's a lot of healthy kinds of foods, snacky foods too. And we distribute those to the senior center, and we're working on getting that out to all the different corners of the community, Mark Twain's, as well as Lockwood. So it'll take us a little while, I think, to develop the systems for getting those out, but we're getting there. And then on that note, I know it's really exciting that we have this big new community center coming on board. And I think Sean came by a couple of weeks ago and talked about how we have a temporary CFO. File this under managing expectations. It will take us a while to staff up to the level of providing active programming through all the days of the week in the community center. So I just want to ask for people's patience as we learn how to do that. It's a big step forward for our staff and our organization to get there. We still have systems to be put in place. We have library books all over the place, and it will just take us some time. I anticipate we'll probably have an idea of how to ride this bicycle in about 6 months, but we'll be learning how to do that along the way. So just I ask for people's patience. So that's my report for today.
Great. Okay.
I took a sneak peek at the facility the other day. Looks good.
Yeah, and you know, people are welcome to drop by. There's not always somebody there, but yeah, people are welcome to drop by. And if we have the time, we'll do a tour.
Thank you. All right, just going to have the director of the Story County Senior Citizen Center today, Stacy Gilbert.
Nothing today.
Very good. Director of the VCTC, Denny Dodson. Morning, Denny.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Denny Dodson, Tourism Director. Quite a bit to update you on. I'll just stick with the highlights here. For the first time I can remember, I think, because I've been with the county almost 10 years, I'm fully staffed. It's been an evolution over the last few years of us growing, taking on different responsibilities, and including pipers and you know other things, but special events and all that kind of stuff. But we are fully staffed. We welcome Liza and Jen this week to help out with both as the counter in the visitor center, and then Jen over at the pipers part time. With Whitney, so that's a good feeling. The V&T Railway Commission met last week, and we passed a tentative budget, which combining two budgets, so it was kind of quite a chore for a couple of the other commissioners and myself. We also announced Elaine Barksdale Spencer as our general manager. So she's taking the reins from here going forward, and I think that Jack, myself, and the other board members now could be more of a true advisory board instead of a working board, which would be nice. And with that, you'll see on your next meeting agenda the local agreement that we passed with the V&T Railway Commission in regards to different support that Story County will continue to help ensure that it works as planned. So we'll bring that to you with the interlocal agreement that was agreed upon last week at the commission meeting. And then finally, today, I know that Mr. Gallagher loves to get up here and put on a show, and he does a great job at that. But if we do get out of here on time and there's not a lot of public input, Studio 6, our first hotel in probably more than 15, 16 years, will be opening, do a grand opening today at 3 o'clock. I will be there. I know many department heads. We're going to try to be there as well. And everyone's invited. It's another milestone here on the Comstock. So, with that, any questions?
Great. Thanks, Eddie. All right, over at the fire department, Chief Nevin. Thanks, Chief. County Recorder, Jim Chapman. Director of Communications, Dave Beller.
I've got a few more requests you told me. morning. Dave Ballard, Story County Communications. Just a couple things. Today we got a big project going in the building here. We're putting the new phone system in. So that's being cut over as we speak. We're leaving AT&T. We're going to a voice over IP solution, and that's coming in now. In fact, you guys used the Star phone a few minutes ago. That was part of that project. So it's slowly coming up, and we'll be working on that. You're going to probably see a few hiccups the next couple of days. I always anticipate them. Usually what will happen is we'll get it put in, and something will crash or whatever, and we have to battle through that. But we're hoping we got ahead of it this time and installed it about a week early so we could try to work out the bugs. But, you know, we'll see. AT&T's porting the numbers over, so every office will still have their same numbers. But we're able to cut costs on a lot of stuff because every office doesn't need all the numbers they have. All we have to really do is port over the listed numbers, and everything else is kind of a virtual number, so you save money in the long run. We got a lot of private numbers for, like, the Star phones and things like that. They were able to go out and get us an 847 prefix. It's kind of a goofy number, but we're able to put those in there. And that's only going to cost us about 35 cents a phone a month to do that way, as opposed to probably the, I don't know what AT&T charges, anywhere from probably 6 to 21 bucks a month. So it'll be a pretty big savings on it. Hopefully we'll have that all up and running today with no other issues with it. I didn't plan on doing it today. I was kind of telling people about it. You know, I knew it was going to end up being a bad time. AT&T gave us the port date when they were going to do it. It just so happened to be today, the day of the budget meetings and everything else. So it's probably already crazy in the courthouse, but we got that going now too. But so far, so good with it. And next week, I believe it's the 8th through the 14th, is that correct, is National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week, Dispatch Week. Just kind of a thing they do for around the country, just for the dispatchers, to kind of honor them for everything they do. Every time there's, you know, something going on, it's always the cops and the firemen that get all the glory, and now they're kind of recognizing the dispatchers, and that's a kind of a week-long event, and that's all next week. I don't have anything else.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
All right. Director of Community Relations, Sherry Neville.
Good morning again, Sherry Nevin for the record. Just a reminder that the Lockwood Regional Landfill is holding free dump events starting this Thursday, so this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. On Saturday, the Senior Center along with the CERT team has teamed up and they're going to be offering dumping assistance for seniors. If there's anyone in the community who's a senior and requires assistance moving items to the dump, please contact Stacy at the Senior Center and they'll get you on the list. So that's this Saturday, April 7th. They'll also have events in Lockwood next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and the following Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Our event here in Virginia City will be May 3rd through 5th. It'll be from 8 to 4. They are closed for lunch from 12 to 12:30. We have a list on our county website and Facebook page of all of the items that are accepted there. So if anyone has any questions, you know, detail related, they can contact Waste Management. I'm going to give a number out. It's 329-8822. My office number has appeared on some information that was sent out about the Lockwood Regional Landfill. So we're getting calls from all areas of Northern Nevada about that event. So that's all I have for today.
Great. All right. Thank you, Jerry. Director of Planning and HR, Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Chairman. Commissioners, Austin Osborne for the record. I'm going to talk about two things today. One's the lands bill, and the other is our health insurance status. I'll start with our health insurance. Tomorrow will be our open enrollment. We'll have one tomorrow. We'll have one on Friday as well for the employees that will come and learn about their health benefits program and sign up for the health benefits program. A little short history is here. I've said several times at these meetings that our experience rating is a little bit upside down at the moment. It's a roll of the dice. It isn't necessarily indicative of anything in particular with our group. It just happens to be not a good last 12-month period of experience. So our carrier came back to us, Hometown Health. and a 34% increase in our premiums, which is very significant. I've given you updates over the last few months about where we would be in this. Working with our health benefits insurance broker, LP Insurance, we were able to get it down to 23% increase. And talking with you all and some other folks on our team, you know, really asking we get it down a little bit lower, try to be less of a budget impact. So we did work back as a team again and trying to get that lower. We did. We got it down to 16.6% lower. It's been a $100,000 difference from what the original increase was going to be versus where we are. We did have to make adjustments to get to that 16%, meaning adjustments to our employee health benefits plans. Deductions or deductibles will go up, out of pocket will go up, but not enough necessarily to make any major impacts on anybody's lives. But our insurance program is a little bit different than it was before in order to get to that number. We did make some adjustments too to our dental plan, our vision plan, and our life plan, not really to the plans themselves, but we did change carriers on those, and that also reduced our savings or increased our savings on this. That's it. For the lands bill, I'll give you a little update on where we are on that. We're working with the Porter Group in Washington, and they're, of course, working with Amedes Group and Cortez Masto's Group and Heller's Group. Essentially, what the bill is ultimately going to be is to take the bill that was approved prior and just provide clarification to that bill, and to take that bill and merge it in with some other bill that is going on in Congress, hopefully a non-controversial bill, something that would be easily moved through the process, through the approval, in order to get our lands bill finally resolved. We will look at Cortez Masto's Group in particular. Porter's Group is working with her. She is the representative in the state of Nevada on the Natural Resources Committee, so she'll be really the most important person in this bill right now, in addition to Heller and Amedes. Heller has supported the bill, and I think we're aware of that, and Amedes has strongly supported the bill and really has been the forerunner of this bill for the last several years. So we're hoping for the best, but we do believe there will be success in this.
Very good.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Austin. All right, over to the Comptroller's Office. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a regret that I need to announce. Virginia City lost one of its finest last week in the passing of Colonel Thomas Patrick Berry. Colonel Berry was born in Reno, Nevada, and April 12th of 1948 to the late Robert Emmett Berry and Viola Blanche Cunningham Berry. Lieutenant Colonel Berry's career spanned over 21 years and saw tours of Fort Knox, Kentucky, Fort Carson, Colorado, Fort Benning, Georgia, Seoul, South Korea, and with the Joint Chiefs of Staff in Washington, D.C. His military education included infantry officer and advanced courses, airborne and ranger schools, marine amphibious warfare school, and command and general staff. In the words of one of his friends and also one of my friends, he was the real deal. Thomas graduated from Story County High School in 1966 and was part of three state champion basketball teams and one state champion track team. I believe he is the first Story County graduate to accept an appointment to a U.S. military academy. He went to West Point. While at West Point, his favorite sport, basketball, never left him, as he was the manager for the West Coast or the West Point basketball team, who was coached then by a gentleman by the name of Robert Montgomery Knight, who we all know now as Bobby Knight, who was the infamous coach from Indiana. He was also a teammate of another Hall of Fame coach who played for Bobby Knight at West Point by the name of Mike Krzyzewski. He will be missed. He is my friend. And like so many graduates of Story County, he served his country with distinction. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. I think, wasn't his dad a district attorney here, too? Wasn't Bob Berry a DA of Story County?
Pardon?
Wasn't his father a district attorney here?
Yeah.
All right. Special counsel, Mr. Morris.
Nothing today, thank you.
Thank you. DA Langer?
Nothing at this time.
County Manager Whitman.
A bunch of stuff. Following on the heels of Hugh's sad announcement, and I just learned of this morning, so I don't have anywhere near as the command of facts as Hugh does, but the Comstock lost another character and great man yesterday, Will Cormany. For those of you who knew Will, Will spent many years with the Sheriff's Office working his way up to the rank of sergeant. He was my field training officer, and while I think law enforcement folks as well as firefighters probably have a tendency to call each other all kinds of things, the nickname that always stuck for me with Will was Meat. And it was Meat because his hands were literally the size of probably, you know, cow's hips or something. They were massive. I know Dave knew him, Jeff knew him. Will was a great guy. So we lost a good one. Continuing on with the zip code issue, pretty much the same as Austin. Hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. I think Commissioner McGuffey had an interesting fact that he shared this morning is the current political environment in Washington, D.C. is not getting bills, just coming jetting out of the process. So the update from Dan Maurer with the John Porter Group, H.R. 756, the Postal Service Reform Act of 2017, is the main legislative vehicle that will help us address our zip code issue, as you recall, which was passed out of committee in 2017. A major reason why the bill hasn't had much momentum since then was that the bill's original author, Representative Jason Chaffetz, retired from Congress a short time after the bill was passed by the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, which Chaffetz chaired then. On March 20th, Representative Garrett asked for unanimous consent to be considered the first sponsor, replacing Chaffetz, in order to do things like add co-sponsors to the bill, request reprints of the bill, and other administrative duties important to the process. We are hopeful that this act will give momentum to the postal reform bill and that it will soon be considered by the full House of Representatives. In addition to the postal bill, we are also adding our zip code language into any other piece of legislation possible, including our lands bill that Austin referenced. We are also considering the idea of stripping our zip code language from the postal bill and trying to pass it as a standalone bill. We're working closely with Nevada's Senate office and the office of Congressman Hamaday to strategize on the best way forward. That's the update from D.C., which isn't much of an update. Justice Court. For the past year and a half, and maybe 2 years, the district court judges have expressed a strong desire to have us find a solution where the Justice Court could have their own location. I've mentioned this before. With the acquisition of what we're calling the cottage, the Piper House, not the Opera House, we thought we had a good location on the parking lot down low. Judge Harrington and I met with the architect, Pete DeBay, last week, and there's a saying engineers use about trying to squeeze 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag. It's just not going to fit. So I have a few more talks to have with the chairman on this, but logic seems to dictate that we'll be coming down to the jail site. The good news is, by building just the Justice Court, there's so much room down there, we hope, that we'll be able to build a small single-story building and eventually add on to it over time. That should limit our cost. We have a good cost per square foot from Shaheen Beauchamp, the builders of the community center, and we will be moving forward. I hope to put this as an agenda item on an upcoming meeting here shortly. Tesla. I can't believe that almost 3 years have gone by, and they really haven't because it took us a year to negotiate, but there are provisions in our government services agreement that we need to either renegotiate or radically reduce the amount Tesla compensates for things like plan review and permitting, and also for fire staffing out of Station 75. Yesterday, I noticed Tesla, according to the government services agreement, that we wish to meet and discuss terms on both those, and I'll be working with our DA's office throughout that. Next, Mary Walker has alerted Marshall, myself, Austin, and others that, you know, with the legislative session already getting ready for 2019, a lot of people are once again thinking that we're making money hand over fist, which I think you'll hear different when Mr. Gallagher reviews our tentative budget. We're working closely with some financial consultants, specifically Marty Johnson, hopefully with JNA, to kind of take the GOED report that was done back in 2014 and was the basis for the legislation for the Tesla session. We hope to get that and kind of update and put facts to how much payroll has been spent in Washoe County, in Reno and Sparks, and what hasn't happened, truthfully, in Story County in some respects. So that's that one. We'll be, it'll take a couple months to get that out to you. Next up is an update on behalf of Mike for the wastewater pipeline project. Last Friday, we hit the magic date of halfway. 200 days done, 200 days remaining to substantial completion. We're on target for the most part, although I will tell you last week was a very rough week in terms of unanticipated, not artifact discoveries, but utility discoveries and problems. There was an unlocated, unknown water pipe feeding the courthouse, and we had shutoffs that are basically down at Silver Street and down at Sutton Street. So we had to knock out an awful lot of water on Tuesday, only to have it re-break, not from the contractor this time. But we had water essentially out of the courthouse all day on Thursday. The good news is when we're down that long, we're able to capitalize on it. Hugh's very flexible in finding certain sums of money. And we bought, I believe, three more isolators that will allow us to lessen the areas that we have to shut off when we have problems or service needs in the future. So, and then we have apparently a rather large issue right here on Taylor and B. The engineers were up at 7 this morning, coming up with a fix for that. Again, these are just things you don't know until you start cutting into the ground and working. Okay, thank you. I'll talk generically then if I can. Sticking on the lines of sewage, we've had an issue for quite a while with the Gold Hill septic system. We've known that. We had it originally in this project, but the bids came in way too high for the funding that we had available from USDA. So last week, Mike and Jason and I met with NDEP, our engineers, and a representative from the State Revolving Fund to talk about fixes, and we will continue to kind of work that forward. You'll hear me mention that again when we look at Mike's contract amendment that is on the agenda coming up, but it would look like Far West has sharpened their pencil, and we've got some fixes that we might be able to afford. And it sounds like the State Revolving Fund and USDA might both be willing funding participants.
I just want to mention that we're on target. I'm not going to go into any specifics. Come on. Against the advice of counsel, I'm just going to tell you that we had a great meeting last week. I think our community development group is now getting on top of a number of nuisances, if you will, and quite honestly, probably the best report I had was a report that said, you know, these are the ones that have gone away, that we've solved. So we're all hopefully on the same page, working with the DA and everything.
Last is, we'll, this is about as much advance notice as we can ever give. January 1st this year is the first Tuesday in January. I doubt anybody really wants to meet with on New Year's Day after New Year's Eve. So I checked with Vanessa. The people that are elected and or reelected, their terms of office are in effect the first Monday of the new year. So that would be January 7th. So our proposal is to go ahead and move the January 1st meeting to January 7th, swear in those who will take office or retake office, and go ahead and have our commission meeting. We'll face what we do for the second meeting based on how it looks. And that's it.
Great. Any quick? Stevens? Nothing today? Alrighty. That's going to go ahead and conclude item number 6, and now we'll move on to item number 7, which are the board comments, which will take no action or public comment. And we'll move down to the far end of the table. Commissioner Gilman?
Nothing today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Gilman. Commissioner McGuffey?
The East Area kind of St. Mary's Art Center is a kind of a fun little thing there. A great turnout. I'd like to thank Erica who ran the show, and then the fire department as well. They were there with their truck, and the kids liked that big truck. You know, everybody wanted to climb on it. Of course, they think it's a gymnasium. So it was a good turnout, and it was a great Easter. The other thing is, I'd like to reiterate with Denny on the VNT. You know, we got a new board, of course, due to our Assembly Bill 57. And now we have a new GM, that being Elaine Barkle Spencer. And the whole team's got a whole bunch of new enthusiasm moving this train forward. So thank you.
Great. Thanks, Jack. All right. I don't have anything today, so we'll move on to item number 8. This is discussion only. We'll take no action. Discussion of Story County Code 17-84-100, again, which limits the size of political signs to 2 square feet in certain zones. D.A. Langer.
Good. D.A. Langer. Good morning, commissioners. Came to my attention during this election that the actual signs that people use, which by a standard sign, a standard political sign across the nation, the smaller yard signs are 18 by 24 inches. And so that is a standard that's been in existence for years and years and years. And the reason for that, which is kind of interesting, is that the signs at that size, people have the ability to read them when they go by. Like Langer's, like a name, letters, Langer, yeah, that would be me. Letters have to at least be 10 inches tall. And so the minimum standard is an 18 by 24-inch sign. Well, when I was getting actually ready for my own campaign and reading this, the ordinance, I realized that what we have in our ordinance is a 2 square feet. And two square feet is actually 12 inches by 24 inches. So our statute only permits in a yard sign to be that of 12 inches by 24 inches. And in checking into it to see what could be done about it, number one, you can't even order a 12 by 24 inch sign because it's not standard. And if you chose to, you'd either have to order an 18 by 24 inch sign and then cut your sign down, or special order it, which would be exorbitant. This has been in existence in 2012, so the people that have run in our jurisdiction before that would probably use their same signs, and maybe if they've won, use reelect or you just use their general signs or ordered their signs for this election, because our statute also limits putting up signs 60 days before the election, which is consistent with NDOT and the right-of-ways. So with all that being said, I've come to the conclusion that something had to be done. I believe that based on the representation that I've given you, that the sign ordinance is unconstitutional in this area, not to get heavily into the constitutionality of a statute or ordinance, but what, the thing that they look at is time, place, and manner. And there's a so there's a standard on what is constitutional, what is not. And in this case, the three factors that you'd look into to the constitutionality of a statute or ordinance is it content neutral? Here it's a political sign that people put up yard signs all over the country when they're running for office. Does the government have an interest in this? No. It's, again, a yard sign virtually setting forth a person's name, what office that they're running for. And when you're looking at a yard sign, you're looking at it to say what is the least restrictive method. And in this case, it's a 18 by 24 inch sign. So what I have talked to Mr. Osborne as far as the statute and when it was put into existence in 2012, our sign ordinance used to say political signs and posters would not exceed 24 inches width and 34 inches in length. And that was changed to 2 square feet. So it basically, when talking to him, in the picture of it is 2 square feet, so 24 by 24. But when you say 2 squared, it changes it to the technically, well, not technically, mathematically, that's a 12 by 24 inch sign. So the planning department has been working on the sign ordinance. They're going to change the sign ordinance. But virtually what I'm going to do during this time period as your prosecutor is the belief that I, when things come across my desk to prosecute, I have to look at each and every case for different factors when I'm making a determination whether I'm going to prosecute. When I get something from the sheriff's office or other groups that have sent something over to me, I have to look at each case before I determine whether I'm going to prosecute to see if it meets the elements that I believe I could prove beyond a reasonable doubt when I file on it. And the same would be with this. If somebody were to submit a sign violation to my office, I have to consider whether I'm going to prosecute somebody for a sign violation, because our sign ordinance also says that, you know, certain groups must, you know, turn these in. Well, I'm here today to tell you that to avoid any sort of conflict of interest on my part as your district attorney and to have any sort of picture of impropriety, my signs are, I am going to follow the sign ordinance, which is the 12 by 24. So when you see my signs, just realize they will be a little different. But everyone else, if there is a, if there happened to be something that came across my desk for prosecution based on the fact that I believe in analyzing this particular situation, that the statute is, as it stands today, is unconstitutional, so therefore during this time period, I think Mr. Osborne can talk to this, but I believe the people that are most affected are the people that are in the primary, but I will not be prosecuting any sign violations because I believe at this time the 12 by 24 sign is unconstitutional.
And here it says that the last two words, and this is the size of the signs at 2 square feet in certain zones. What are the certain zones are we referring to?
The certain zones, that's an interesting question. So it's in the commercial zone, the residential, and the extremely residential. And I just found out today that Lockwood, actually, and Rainbow Bend is a public utility district. So they would not fall into this. So an 18 by 24 sign in Lockwood and Rainbow Bend would work. Would not work in Virginia City, Mark Twain, and the Highlands. Yeah, do you want to? Yeah.
I believe that NDOT last week in the RGJ also went ahead and put in their suggestions for people when they're placing their signs within the highway right-of-ways as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Austin Osborne for the record. We're aware of this. I totally agree with D.A. Langer and what the situation was. Kathy and I in our department, we've been working very diligently in getting the sign ordinance updated. If you're aware, all of the zoning has been updated periodically. And really to do exactly to try to prevent these things is to take an ordinance that's very complicated, that has a lot of moving parts, a lot of gears, try to get rid of all that. The new ordinances, everything you've seen with zoning, everything you've seen with the planning of developments, even in the new sign ordinance, is to streamline these, clean them up, and not have all these little gotchas in there that you just can't possibly find in a very complex ordinance that's unnecessarily complicated. Kathy's done a great job in creating ideas of streamlining it. We're expecting this final draft to be done here in 20 to 30 days, and then it'll go through the process. Unfortunately, with a posting and everything that's required by NRS, it'll end up shooting right into that primary election. So I'll let you know, I'll defer to DA Langer on how she approaches all of this and everything, but I can assure you this is getting fixed and very quickly. I want to provide a couple clarifications as I see it. Rainbow Bend is it's a planned unit development, so it's a little bit different than a residential zone. The LCC, some of those areas are also not residentially zoned. And so in the commercial residential zone only and in the residential zone only, there are the places where you have to have these smaller signs. Otherwise, you can have 32 square feet, the size of a sheet of plywood, essentially 4x8 or anything in between. So, you know, any candidate, despite this situation, including, I'd argue, DA Langer, you know, could put these other size signs in, you know, the forestry zones and the industrial zones and the public zones and these other zones that sometimes are even intermixed with in the residential and the commercial residential zone. So that's all I have to say. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Let's just say I'm going to find out a lot about zoning during this election. But also the other thing to take into consideration are the statewide races. So when you have the governor's race, the attorney general's race, the Supreme Court race, when they put up their 18x24-inch signs, they'll also know that that is something that I will not be prosecuting according to the statute because I believe it to be unconstitutional. So does anybody have any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Langer. Moving along now to item number 9, discussion of possible action. Approve amended agreement with All Comstock LLC, authorizing Mike Nevin to oversee the 5-mile waterline replacement project and the Gold Hill septic system renovation. Mr. Whitney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. We've learned from a lot of experience that having folks like Mike Northern and, in this case, Mike Nevin, are invaluable to us on big projects. Specific to Mike Nevin, we put him under contract some time back to oversee the Virginia City sewer pipeline replacement project, the one I referred to in my staff report. We signed Mike to a contract that paid $4,500 a month, all expenses. Mike provides everything. He's not an employee. He's an independent contractor. And he sets his own work hours and provides his own materials and equipment. It has been an absolute godsend to have Mike out there on the job. We initially thought Mike might be spending 20, 25 hours a week. Mike is spending probably well in excess of 40, sometimes on weekends. Again, that contract was intended to be limited to the sewer line replacement. So as we merge into these other two projects, the one Sherry mentioned, the water pipeline project, as well as the potential for a Gold Hill now solution, it became clear that we need somebody with Mike's experience and caliber to oversee those projects as well. We're in what I would call right now the more administrative phase of both these projects, getting ready to go to bid on water and getting ready to go to design on the Gold Hill sewer. But it's not fair to ask Mike to attend these meetings, you know, and not adjust his contract. So keep in mind, at $4,500 for sewer, Mike and I came to an agreement, and I want to thank Mr. Loomis with the DA's office for helping structure this. In essence, what we're going to do is we're going to raise his current rate of pay to $8,000 a month. But that's going to be broken out as follows. We're going to take his $4,500 a month for order. The existing project ongoing right now that he's probably out there working as we speak. And we're going to lower that to $4,000 a month. For the five-mile pipeline project, which is going to be a lot of rock oversight up in the divide area behind us, that's valued at $2,500 per month. And then the Gold Hill septic system would be $1,500 a month. So the concept is you have $8,000 right now, but come September, October, when the certificate of completion and Ames officially closes the sewer project, that would reduce down to $4,000. And as any other project ends, it would continue to work its way down. So I can tell you, based on the certified payrolls I see Sherry doing, that this is a bargain. And I'm a strong advocate that Mike's, we couldn't be doing this project, I don't think, without Mike right now.
Do we have any estimated timelines on how long it might take to do the 5 mile water transmission line and the Gold Hill septic? Just
about 1 year, right?
Oh, about 1 year? Okay. Do we have these monies available, or do we have them in this current tentative budget?
You have to ask Mr. Gallagher that. Okay. I don't think so. I think our plan was to put it in between tentative and final.
Okay.
Water and sewer, is that correct?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Well, commissioners have questions regarding this?
I don't have any questions, no, sir.
This is the first time I heard of it, so I'm kind of don't know what to think.
Take public comment. Well, I was kind of hoping that Mike would have stayed on as the Public Works Director while we got all these projects completed, but since he decided to retire on us, there's few people that have his knowledge of public works throughout the town and the county. So I really can't think of anybody more qualified to take on the project.
And I mean, just a small example. Yesterday, I mentioned the issue that we have on B and Taylor, and it's a significant surprise. And decisions need to be made from the field right then and there. And Mike consulted with me. We made a decision, and we kept moving forward in tandem with both the contractor and the engineer.
Well, what I like about it too is that it's going to time out, and we've got about 200 working days left on the water system. The wastewater system here in town. And then maybe 1 year on each of the others. So at least we know this wasn't something that's going to go on into infinity.
So as when this, say the sewer system gets completed, then he's done with that contract. So we're not paying that 45 anymore.
Four. We lowered that to four.
Okay, four.
By three.
So, but he'll be collecting from the other two projects.
Correct. And I see, it's going to be hard to tell because we don't have funding or design on Gold Hill. But I see the Gold Hill solution looks like it's going to be pretty simple. It's going to be a package plan.
Okay, well, we wouldn't be paying them for during the design phase.
Yes, because there's plan reviews, interaction. He's already been to them. In fact, he may be in a meeting this morning. I wasn't sure if he was going, but there's an awful lot that goes on while you go through this.
Okay. What about when if they have to shut down because of winter conditions?
I guess Mike and I can address that. I mean, I can also tell you right now he's probably been working on both these projects for, maybe not Gold Hill, but for the water project he's been working for the last 4 months uncompensated. So, I mean, it can be sometimes to work out with Mike. I don't anticipate these projects getting shut down. Ames has proved that this year, that rain causes them a day, maybe 2 days, because of safety concerns in the trenches, that they just move and do something else.
Well,
No, I do agree with you. Mike is the guy.
Yeah.
He knows more what's under this ground than anybody.
Well, I haven't bothered to count out the hours, but, you know, again, if you take a look at what a project engineer costs for them, whether it's with Far West or with Ames, they're making substantially more than this.
Yeah. Well, I work next door to Mike, and I see him often about every day. He doesn't sit still.
Okay. Well, once again, I'll ask if there's any public comment. Hearing none, get some action on this. Can I get a motion to approve this?
Okay. I'll move to approve the amendment of the agreement with all Comstock LLC, thereby authorizing Mike Nevin to oversee two additional construction projects and authorize the chairman to sign.
Second your motion.
It's been moved and second to approve this amended agreement with all Comstock LLC. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, Commissioners.
All right. So, Mr. Gallagher, we're ready to get into the budget?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So, at this time, we're going to go ahead and recess as the Board of County Commissioners and convene as the Story County Fire Protection District Board. Moving along to item number 11. This is a discussion of possible action. Review and possible approval of the 2018-2019 474 Fire District Tentative Budget for submission to the Department of Taxation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This tentative budget is a little in the order of which we're presenting a lot different than we have in the past, because in the past we were always interpreting and holding up the process to get several approvals on certain things within the general fund. We hope this is better. If it's not, I'm sure that you gentlemen will let me know. The 474 Fire District projected revenue for this district is scheduled to decrease over last year's budget by approximately $1.6 million. This is mainly due to the elimination of SAFER grant proceeds and the transfer of fire permit and plan review fees to the Community Development Department. Revenue may increase due to more accurate ad valorem estimates, because we have not got those from the Department of Taxation yet, and negotiation between Story County and Tesla labor equivalents. Projected expenditures are expected to increase a little over 3% over last year's budget, with salaries and wages accounting for a little over 8% of the increase due to a new collective bargaining agreement. Please note that this budget is projecting a operating loss for this upcoming fiscal year, and in addition, a negative ending fund balance will occur if this continues. Additional analysis is required and will continue towards this special revenue fund through the final submission. The Fire Emergency Fund was created by Resolution 07240 under the direction of NRS 474460 and NRS 474550. The Fire Emergency Fund must be used for emergencies and must not be used for operating expenses. NRS 474510 establishes a threshold of $1 million for this fund. Anything over this amount may be credited to the fire operating fund. It is the intention of the fire chief and the county manager to fund this account to the statutory limit, which will probably take some time. The Mutual Aid Special Revenue Fund was created by Resolution 12-356 in August of 2012 to account for all deployments and billings outside the 474 Fire District. I would like to suggest that you reserve portions of the ending fund balance in this particular special revenue fund for future purchases or maintenance of heavy equipment. And then last is the Fire Capital Projects Fund, which was by resolution adopted in May of 2016, which allows for capital projects attributed to a 5-year plan, which was submitted to the board. its ending fund balance right now is $1 million, and in any one year, we could probably spend up to that, at least $750,000. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that is the tentative budget for the 474 Fire District.
So the revenues that were brought in by the fees that we were collecting, first, that's moved over into community development?
Plan review fees and permit fees, yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And that's on the revenue side. On the expenditure side, did we have personnel that moved over on that side too?
We had three people move from the fire district over to community development. And so that makes, with that reduction, even with that reduction, their payroll went up about 8%. Is anticipated to go up about a little over 8%.
Okay, so I guess the next question is why are we running $1.3 million short?
For this purpose, staff, we don't know at this point in time what ad valorem will be created by this, nor do we know what the negotiation between Mr. Whitten and Tesla will incur, because there is an amount of money that is used to go ahead and cover some of the expense of fire department personnel and the industrial park that is attributed to Tesla.
Get some questions.
Are you making any ways or headways towards cutting that $1.3 million down?
Yes. A lot of it, Commissioner McGuffey, will depend on what additional revenues we will see by the final budget. If we don't, then there are certainly some things that we have to do. We are going to balance that budget. There will be some things that we'll have to do.
Okay. Thank you. 1.3, that's just... Yes. Can't do it.
No.
Okay.
Lance, have you got any questions?
No, sir.
Take public comment on the 474 budget. Okay, so we know we're going to have to work on this. We get a motion to approve the tentative. And
yeah.
Before you do that, now, Mr. Gallagher, when are we going to be coming back for the final budget hearing?
It will be, the first meeting in May.
Okay. Oh, we were going to do something interesting. I think we're going to have two meetings, right, Jen?
Yes.
We should have it dialed in by the first meeting in May. But state law says that you have to approve it the third week of May any day. So I think we've got a formality. Plus, it gives our team here a couple more weeks to, you know, throw a couple of Hail Marys and do some more. Okay. Am I correct?
Okay, good. All right. Thank you. Jack?
Okay. You ready for a motion?
Yeah.
Okay. I recommend that we approve the filing for the 2018-2019 474 Fire District tentative budget to the Department of Taxation.
I'll second your motion.
Moved and second to approve the tentative budget for the 474 upcoming year. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay. At this time, we're going to adjourn as the 474 Fire Board, and we're going to convene as the Story County Water and Sewer Board. Moving along now to item number 13. This is discussion, possible action, review and possible approval of the 2018-2019 water sewer tentative budget for submission to the Department of Taxation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The water system revenue increased slightly, and estimated expenses are projected to increase a little over 9% due to projected increase in equipment maintenance. For the plant, operating supplies, and system maintenance. They are, again, budgeting a a negative loss. We've never had that happen. However, their ending fund balance is very healthy at this point in time. The Virginia Divide Sewer, revenue has increased slightly. However, expenses have anticipated, are expected to project an increase due to lab fees, debt service, and depreciation. We had to write a letter this year because of the over-appropriation as compared to the actual on depreciation because the plant came online, and so that depreciation expense is fairly significant. Again, we are projecting a net loss in that area. That ending fund balance is again healthy, although we've never had a loss in any of the years actually that we have since the last 4 years or 5 years. So with that, this is another area we're going to take a look at, take some more look at, and see, you know, what we can do. And I'm confident that we can be able to balance this budget by the final.
Does the sewer department, are they anticipating an increase in chemical usage in this?
Yes, a lot of it is because of the usage. A lot of it is because of lab fees now that are coming up. The debt service is the primary one plus the depreciation. So depreciation is a really non-hard cost expense where we have to put them.
Because I'm sure they can anticipate higher than the average flows since we're replacing the wastewater sewer lines because a lot of that water wasn't making it to the sewer plant, and now it's going to.
There's some, it's kind of a mixed bag, you're right. We'll get increased flows undoubtedly based on what we're finding and the condition of some of the lines and laterals. But at the same time, we were able, and again, I don't want to report this officially until I can confirm the numbers, but I believe you were aware, Mr. Chairman, that we had four storm drains on C Street that drained into the system. Those were getting oils and antifreeze and salt and brine and all that stuff into the system, and done an NDEP compliance audit, found that we have a fairly interesting organism down there that shouldn't be there that causes us to increase our chemicals. And we're still testing based on storms, but we think we have three out of four and a portion of the fourth storm drain off the sewer system, draining into a separate, you know, channel. That can be a huge plus to us. Again, I don't see this year that Gold Hill will probably come into play, but we know our costs will go up there because we'll have a second package plan.
Okay, great. Good point on the storm drains. Thanks, Pat. Commissioners, have any questions for Mr. Gallagher? How about if we open up for public comment? Any public comment regarding this item? Okay. Now, if I can go ahead and get a motion to approve the water sewer budget.
I'll move to approve the filing of the 2018-2019 water sewer tentative budget for the Department of Taxation.
Second your motion.
Move to second to approve. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. We'll adjourn as the Water Sewer Board, and we will reconvene as the Story County Board of County Commissioners. Next up is item number 15, discussion of possible action. Review and possible approval of the 2018-2019 county funds tentative budget for submission to the Department of Taxation. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. General fund revenue is projected to increase a little over 2% over last year's budget. There is still work to be done with on the ad valorem and centrally assessed side because of the final numbers not depicted by the Department of Taxation as of yet. Negotiation with Tesla on reimbursable costs and adoption to a current building code value process. If these things come into effect between now and the final, I anticipate that this number will be much higher. Clerk Treasurer's Department will add DMV operations during the next fiscal year. They are grabbing that from our assessor, and as such, that is probably the main reason for their projected increase of 9.5% to $497,000. District court expenses are anticipated.
Can you mind if I chime in occasionally?
Yeah.
I want to thank Vanessa in particular for openly agreeing to take on DMV. This will allow us, we believe, to be open from H-BOT. And, you know, we're not going to do it until after she's out of her palace in the North parking lot. But it's something that we're actually all looking forward to, whether it's the assessor, Vanessa and her team, and definitely all of us, to get that extra hour back when people can get some of their work done on their lunch hour.
Great. Are you going to be moving that to your office?
Yeah, but not from them.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, you're fine. District court fees are anticipated to increase about $45,000, specifically due to increase in anticipated public defender's fees. This is per NRS 458, and I believe this is a letter that Vanessa gets, which pretty much sets in stone what their charges are going to be for us or to us for this next fiscal year. Genetic marker testing. This is a special revenue fund derived from justice court and district court fees set by statute NRS 176. Expenditures range from courtroom improvements to lab fees. We're projecting $8,000 in revenue and about $8,500 in expenditures. Drug court revenue is accumulated at the time of sentencing and passed through the Carson City Alternative Sentencing per the order of our district court judges. We anticipated about $600 coming in and about $600 coming out. Our recorder. The significant increase in recordings and other responsibilities of the recorder's office has attributed to having an additional full-time equivalent to replace a part-time equivalent. Jim Chapman's department, I'll tell you, is if you look at what they collected in real property transfer tax fees, this is, you know, 99.99% due to the industrial part, increased 175% over last year. And with this is a very studious and arduous task of making sure that all of these recordings are done right. In the past, Jen's been... has tried to use part-time help in trying to suffice the workload that goes on within the recorder's department. However, with all of that, we have felt that it also breeds a turnover, which means that as soon as you get somebody trained, they may head for somewhere else that may have a full-time position. Staff believes anyway that Jen's department needs this site to stay up with the workload, and therefore we're recommending that to her budget of about $372,000. The assessor, the majority of this request is due to land reclassification, which is required by our new software application, and additional fees for what we call tax management associates. This is a firm which audits large firms out of the industrial park for personal property declarations. Now, what happens is if I'm a business such as either, you know, a Walmart, any of those, Google if they come in, I have a declaration of what personal property I'm putting in there. Now, it's pretty much Boy Scouts honor. However, with some of these places, they may have either forgotten or miscalculated what actual physical personal property is on their premises. This firm goes in for the big guys, does an audit, usually has to go to someplace else because their corporate office is not here, and audits those records, and then we get to go back 3 years for additional taxes. So this started last year. We're going to continue it hopefully through next year, and I think that two things will happen. Revenue will increase because of this, and number two, filings will probably be more accurate after that.
Have you seen any increase in revenue since we started this?
They haven't started billing yet. Oh. Once they get the report, it takes them a while to recalculate all this stuff and start billing.
If I may chime in on that, I asked the same exact question. And I believe their contract is coming up for renewal probably either at the next meeting or the meeting after that. And the assessor said she will be fully prepared to give us, you know, a readout as to, you know, that it's paying for itself. It is more than paying for itself. For instance, although it's still subject to the billing, as Hugh mentioned, and subject to the challenges through equalization and everything, there was one error, honest mistake probably, $300,000 in revenue. So we're not going to put it in the bank yet, but yeah, we're talking big numbers. As Hugh said, we tier them, and we're not doing the small, little, tiny ones. We're going after the mid to big ones.
Yeah. Okay. The temperature, anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Technology Fund is allowed by NRS 250. The recorder, clerk, and treasurer can charge additional document fees, of which the expenditures must be used on technology, of which we have expected at least approximately $78,000 in fees this year, and possibly expending about $84,000 in those fees. Again, this is a negative. However, their ending fund balance can more than adjust for this. And as we'll find out later on, there's going to be a tremendous amount of technology for this fiscal year 18-19, as far as our infrastructure is concerned within this courthouse. Buildings and grounds. Buildings and grounds has reorganized since the retirement of Mike Nevin. We have reallocated salary and benefits through six departments, which resulted in additional allocations. The primary reason for the increase in expense appropriation of $84,000 is utilities and building maintenance anticipated with the association of the acquisition for Piper's Opera House. We don't have a line on that just yet, but that is the reason for that. Pools and parks. We have felt that the addition of a pool manager during the season is required to bring additional service and stability to the swimming pool, only during the time it's open. In addition, allocations for maintenance of our parks, of our four parks, increased by $9,500. Our service department, additional requirements for service needed by our public safety departments has made it a requirement for an additional full-time fleet service mechanic. The cost savings by this additional mechanic will prevent having to send equipment to outside vendors, which rates are considerable. In addition, we will start next year charging back public safety for all work performed at a nominal rate, probably that serviceman's rate. I think that will, and only for work that is performed by those departments. So I think that will work out well. Roads Department is a special revenue fund, is anticipated to increase about 17% due to the gas tax, SCCRT, and import tonnage fees. Expenses are anticipated to decrease by 10.4%, mainly due to road improvements previously completed, and those hopefully due to be completed within this fiscal year.
Hugh, if I can on this one too, I think for Commissioner Gilman and also Chris's, the work schedule itself definitely takes into effect the tri-capital improvement roads maintenance project. Essentially, we're hitting, I think, five, six roads, maybe even seven, with some significant chip seals and slurry seals and whatnot. So.
USDA fund is another special revenue fund where loan proceeds from the next fiscal year are not anticipated at this time. I'm not sure if Sherry's got any good products for us to get you with USDA, but I don't anticipate any loans or anything that we're going to get from USDA in the upcoming fiscal year. However, we don't know. I had thrown in the Justice Court relocation before today, which now becomes, it may not be that expensive, and we may not be able to, but we're ready to do if we need to. Payments include of the USDA for the sewer plant expansion, sewer line replacement, and a fire engine will continue to be appropriated from this account. We anticipate $394,000 in revenue and $395,000 in expenditures for that account. Community development. The name is the same, but the business model is very different and dynamic. In the past, community development was responsible for business license approvals, building permit fees, and plan review fees. This new business model incorporates all the previous attributes, plus the addition of fire permitting and fire plan review fees. The addition does not come without additional expense. Salaries have increased 32% with the inclusion of a fire marshal and two additional employees transferred from the 474 Fire District. And expenses are planned to be increased due to training, which will make all of the inspectors dual certified. I'm not sure if anybody else in this country does this. I mean, we've talked about this, and we pretty much signed off that this is a pretty dynamic way to go. This, again, will depend on the negotiations for permit and plan review fees with Tesla during the upcoming negotiations.
And let me jump on that, if I may, Hugh. This is where, if you think back to the revenues, Hugh very conservatively, very appropriately, took the impacts come July 1st of our government services agreement and our ordinance governing plan review and permitting. That ordinance probably being the more pertinent document relative to community development. Currently, we allocate 3 full-time equivalents. That's 120 hours to Tesla alone, and they pay for it. Our numbers are very solid in terms of tracking, thanks to Sarah and Gary and Melissa and everybody else. But the ordinance calls for that to step down from 3 FTE to 1 FTE come July 1st. Tesla will not survive, and that's not a stock manipulation maneuver. It's a, you know, Tesla can't make the progress they need to with one 40-hour inspector out there. They need 3. Our records show we've been giving them 3. Gary's cross-training, where an inspector can go out and inspect fire sprinklers and sheetrock nailings at the same time, you know, will allow us those efficiencies. So as Hugh said, and I think your choice of words was very apropos, it's nowhere near what it was this time last year, and it's very dynamic. But, you know, we'll make it if Tesla agrees to stick with 3 FTE, and that'll be the requirement.
Okay, so are you saying that these these people put on this department's salary, but Tesla should be paying for them?
Keep in mind that Everybody in community development and all other clients are busy, okay? Tesla right now pays us the equivalent of 3 full-time equivalents, and that's about the level of service they're getting. So, yes, we don't tie necessarily Pete Renaud's salary and say Tesla paid for it, because it could be Pete one day, Tracy the next, Joe the next, Gary's time, Sarah's time from administrative, but yeah, by the time you put it all in that recipe and turn it out, they are currently paying us for 3 full-time equivalents, salary and benefits, and our plan, as we negotiate, as you said, is to continue that, or their service level is going to drop like a hot rock.
Well, I'm having a hard time swallowing this million-dollar pill here. So there's nothing here showing that it tells us that Tesla is basically picking up that tab. Or
I can give you all kinds of reports that show we invoice Tesla quarterly.
Okay.
So
if Tesla's paying for it, I'm kind of losing it here. So this 50% bump, is it really a 50% bump?
Is that, well, it's a 50% bump in expenses that Hugh's got us focused on, rightfully so, but we're not accounting for the increase in revenue that will go with it. That's to be negotiated.
Because part of these are the salaries and benefits that were brought over from fire, right?
Exactly.
So those individuals moved out of fire and moved into community development.
But the fire went up too.
But right.
The fire didn't drop.
Fire went.
Well, it didn't.
Yeah, to go back to that. But the fire revenue dropped because, again, there's an anticipated reduction in the Tesla money that we will negotiate.
We're anticipating that for the fiscal year end 2018. Payments of a little over $1.5 million from Tesla. In the beginning, since they're in a tax-free zone, they probably didn't have to do anything. Of course, we wouldn't do anything. But this reimbursable cost is pretty good. It at least gives us the ability to recoup some of the expenses that we have to doing business out there so they can get their permits and planning reviews.
And I guess I would even take that statement, Hugh, and expand on it. I would propose that what Tesla is currently paying, and hopefully what they will pay as we negotiate the next 3 years beginning July 1 of 18, they are paying for the cost of providing services, particularly through the community development department. You can look at fire differently. They're paying for 50% of our staff out there right now, or 50% of our calls out there. Probably not, you know, but you know, those are pretty hard to pin down when you've got accidents on I-80, probably 3 a day right now.
Yes.
And are they Tesla employers or not? We don't go that far. That's highway patrol.
Okay. Thank you.
District Attorney Department has a marginal increase over last year's budget of about 3%. We always try to negotiate to at least provide our legal department appropriations to fully satisfy current legal proceedings on the horizon. We tried to do it this year. However, there are 2 cases that are going to be moved to the next fiscal year, and we certainly need to give our district attorney the ability to do whatever legal proceedings she needs. Justice Court. The Justice Court fines have increased approximately 43% over last year and are anticipated to double during this reporting period. In order to satisfy the demand, it is suggested and hopefully approved that a 1/2 labor equivalent is necessary. If you look at the Justice Court fines in 2016, they were about $68,000 or $65,000. In 2019, they're scheduled to be, or anticipated to be, $140,000. So their budget is at $388,000 plus.
And, you know, just to chime in on that, because this is really what's happening out at the Tri-Center. Pat just talked about, you know, all the people going out to that area, the amount of traffic tickets that are going to increase. Well, last year I think they increased 111%. They are at a 143% increase right now. The district attorney's office does prosecute all traffic cases. I don't negotiate them. So we take those in, and we do, the fines are reflective of the money that does come into Story County. And so the difference between the $65,000 that we're collecting in fines versus the $140,000, that are anticipating based on the increase that we will collect in fines. With that, the district attorney's office can keep up the pace of doing the traffic tickets that I prosecute, and sometimes Keith does. And but as far as the amount of tickets going into the justice court, that is the one half person that was added, just to give you an idea of what's happening in the area of traffic.
Can we, for just a minute so the record's clear, I think we need to step back. Jack, you said something that I was kind of questioning. And then Gary is kind of helped point out something that I think the budget team may have lost the forest for the trees. If you take a look at I'm on this recap page that I think everybody's on for community development. They went from $800,000 in 16-17, dropped $80,000 or 10%, if you will, in 17-18 current year. That's because of the savings. Dean leaves, no salary, longevity, benefits, or anything. And then Gary comes in under a fixed services contract in the $130,000, $140,000 range, whatever it is, all in. That is only moving up to $1,073,000. So it's not a million increase. You know, it is $1 million total for this department.
No, yeah, but I was referring to just comparing the million to the $602,000. Basically.
602?
Yeah, that's at the top there.
Oh,
well, that's the salary, wages, and benefits.
Yeah, and that's pretty, I would tell you, I think that's probably, if you look at every department, we're salary benefits loaded. We always are, always have been, always will be. It's just the nature of government. But the other thing I do want to call into question, and Jen, maybe you can check this one. I don't think we have a 48.7% increase as reflected on the spreadsheet. I'm calculating out somewhere around 28%. So, you know, it's not what it appears on paper. We'll get it cleaned up.
Okay, that gave you time to think.
Hmm?
I said that gave you time to think, so that was good.
You ready to go?
Yes, as well as everybody else is.
Okay, Mr. Gallagher.
Justice Court Fund. This special revenue fund was created through NRS 176, and expenses are classified as operations, training, and capital expenditures. It should be noted that by a directive from the district court, Justice Court will have to prepare to vacate the district courtroom very soon. We've been talking about this for quite some time. Preparations are underway, and thankfully, we got some progressive news today. So, congratulations, Eileen Hank. Communications expenses are anticipated to increase about $133,000 above last year. $59,000 of this is increased due to a staffing remodel, which involves two dispatchers 24/7. The continued increase in incidents and response calls from the industrial park and the entire county have predicated this proposed increase. We're sitting right now over last year at about 1,000 incident calls from where we were. Now, this is incident calls. So this is, you know, three per day. A lot of this happens at night. A lot of it happens in the early morning. And to give our fire department and our police department if somebody is on a call and they have to stay on that, they pretty much have to stay on it. If they have somebody there that can take the other calls or whatever, because they do get busy, at least this increases the response time for our public service or by public safety departments. So we are anticipating this, and we would like we would certainly like you to consider that. The IT department, the information technology department, is expected to greatly increase its functionality due to the brand new technology infrastructure and additional duties associated with communication towers. Payroll increased a little over 12%, which resulted in a one-half employee equivalent, to satisfy the increased workload. Hardware and software costs are anticipated to be approximately $250,000, and that is for the replacement of this 50-year-old AS400 system that we've got now. Comptroller salaries are projected to increase about 5% due to authorized step increases and reclassifications. Expenses are anticipated to increase 15% in anticipation of additional professional fees with Story County projects. There's a lot of things you will see in professional fees versus salaries. We have a lot of additional things now with coming on with room tax audits. We've got some issues down the road which we will need some professional help on. That is pertaining to their area of expertise. And so we are anticipating this to happen in this next fiscal year. Emergency management.
Can I interrupt?
Go ahead.
I need to back up on the IT thing. You're saying that we need another $260,000 for capital equipment?
That's hardware. That's computer hardware. That's DevNet. And
I thought we had already covered that. No.
No. That will happen when they come online, but we're not online yet. So all of that stuff will happen. If it doesn't, and we're still looking at that, if it doesn't, we'll take it off. But that was the anticipation from James when he was looking at that. Let me look at his notes here for a second. I got it. He has notes.
I thought we were already past that.
We're paid for some of that stuff to get up and operational, to get the training stuff going. Do you have his? So his budget includes core expense Hewlett Packard ProCurve switches with about $50,000. He's got a lot of it happens with the towers now that he's done with the communication towers, one of $25,000. SSD storage arrays, which are mini servers, which is $60,000. He needs a physical backup data plan for the jail, which is about $10,000. And he's looking for a pickup, or used pickup or whatever, which we can take through our existing stuff, which will probably decrease
that. And Hugh, isn't it true that I think where Commissioner McGuffey is recalling is that we have approved going with Tyler and DevNet. This just places the payments in the budget as appropriate and right. In conformance with the contract.
I was in the impression we had already paid for it.
No, sir, I don't.
Yeah, okay.
Emergency management had a nominal increase of a little over 3% due to the increase in anticipated professional services. Emergency mitigation is a special revenue fund which is used to fund resources. Actually, we used up all those resources from the first 14 days of last year during the flood. We have decided to increase this amount of resource available as provided for by statute. we're going to try to get that up to at least 150,000 or 200,000 for this next fiscal year. Community relations budget increased a little over 5% over last year, which was attributed to the following: computer hardware and software of $3,500, additional travel of $2,500, and additional amounts over the past year for communities chest of $20,000, library of $5,000, and the Fourth Ward School of $25,000, which I believe needs a new roof. Park Fund was created to provide capital acquisition towards our four parks. This fund is financed by new construction fees. Their revenue is due to increase. We anticipate $7,000, and for the expenditures, depending upon what equipment is needed, we anticipate about another $109,000. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to skip the sheriff budget at this time and go to equipment acquisition. We will move sheriff to the last until we have approved the all of Story County, and then you can do the sheriff's after that, if that's okay.
Sure. Yeah, before we move on to that, let's go ahead and take about a 10-minute recess, okay?